With traffic, errands, and parking, cars can be a chore.
But a great car can be an adventure, a getaway, and a prized possession.
Whatever your budget or family require, there's a car out there you'll love. We're here to help you find it. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
Big sedans. Happy Friday, by the way, but Big Sedans is tomorrow on the Motor Trend Cable Channel. You can watch four sedans get thrown at each other. Not literally, but two brand new ones.
That's an entirely different episode.
And our two old, maybe we'll do that down the line.
Big sedan cannon.
Yeah, exactly.
We throw sedans at each other.
We're going to play chicken with our ridiculous old sedans. Let's not do that, even though people are going to want to see that. So yeah, it's the first time that we get to feature the Phaeton and the QP5.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the episode I wanted to make when we talked about maybe, possibly, with your help, getting these cars.
For sure.
And here's
this
episode. It's tomorrow, Saturday, and we'll be following shortly on Amazon and Vimeo. We're very excited about it. Can't you tell? I'm very excited. The next three are great. There's that one.
Yeah.
There's the Lemons episode, the third in our trilogy, I promise we're done now, of Lemons racing episodes that is really quite fun.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of those
where
I started editing it and was like, all right, third Lemons episode. It's going to be about the same as the other. I was like, no, this is really fun.
It's cool.
Very fun one.
Yeah.
And then we have Miata RF in the snow with Other Madness.
Turned out great.
That is very cool. Those three are on the way.
It. Yeah, we had fun actually kind of bringing non-empirical data to the, hey, here's what we came up with.
Everyday
thing
driver.
At the end.
Everyday driver does testing. It's crazy.
It
Who knew we were
going
to do testing? Yeah.
All right. Well, guys, thanks to our Covercraft, Griot's Garage, and Haggerty Insurance sponsors bringing TV to you. And you will hear more throughout the podcast from those guys. And the cheap luxury sedans, it's the two really expensive new ones versus our two, the ones that
Not
run.
Not expensive old ones. Yes, exactly.
The ones that run. Well, we've got a couple of cool debates here. First of all, from Louis D., he's in the La Jolla, San Diego area, writing about, you remember the 2003 Mazda Protege 5?
Yeah.
We've never talked about a protege podcast
I think it has somehow escaped mention. You're right. Yeah.
We've also got Michael W. He's in Surrey County, UK, actually the same county you did some growing up years.
For sure. Yeah.
And he's asking about which classic starter Porsche you should get.
A starter Porsche.
It's like my Fersoni.
Please don't stop listening to the podcast because we just said starter Porsche. Please stay with us. I promise.
Well,
he's
got a budget, and starter means low budget. So
yeah,
it's actually kind of difficult, which is why I found it interesting.
I agree.
It's not like starter Porsche, and which $110,000
exactly.
Porsche
coming in
it's
with
not
a,
that.
Not much money and going, I get which one? Yeah, it's going to be very cool. Plus, a lot of really good questions, some of which were, I kind of stopped for a minute and went, what do I think on that one? So I'm excited to get to those as well.
I'm still noodling as well. All right. Louis, you're in La Jolla, San Diego area.
Yeah, cool.
Take your wife to the Stratford Court Cafe, one of my favorite places for breakfast. Oh. Take it to breakfast on Saturday morning. You guys will love that. It's up in Del Mar, one of my favorite places just north of San Diego. He started listening to the podcast. He loves the thoughtful car recommendations. Thank you, Louis. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
His daily is a fairly unknown yellow 2003 Mazda Protege 5, which is a four-door hatchback version of the Protege that was only made in 02 and 03. This is right before it was superseded by the Mazda 3.
Yep.
Okay. He says it has the most unimpressive spec sheet. But the reason he's been driving it for close to 10 years now is because they bought it as poor newlywed college students with around 130,000 miles on it.
I love it.
When they bought it.
Yep.
And they spent $6,000 of their savings to buy it. It was cheap, practical, unique, fun to drive, and economical.
And it still is.
Those are all those things. Those are hard to find traits in modern cars for a good price.
Yeah, for sure.
He says, now 10 years later, I've got a grown-up job, though a car is worth $2,500 on a good day, and though his income increases steadily.
That's like Phaeton money.
Says,
Mazda Protege or Volkswagen Phaeton? Let me think.
Cheap, yes. Practical, for the most part.
You can put anything
unique,
you want in it.
Very unique.
Yeah.
Is it going to run like the Mazda? Well,
I went to lunch this week
with
a buddy in Salt Lake that I used to work with.
Okay.
And I didn't tell him anything about the car before we climbed in. And he legitimately, I think he'd read the license, he legitimately got in and goes, so, because he obviously knows I'm a car guy. He's not a car guy. This is the thing I have to clarify. He's not a car guy.
All right.
And we were going to lunch. We're talking about something totally separate. And he got in, of course, knowing I'm a freak car guy. And the last car he saw me get in was the Lotus. Because the last time I saw him was like 6 months ago.
Oh, right.
So we climb in this. I didn't announce it. I just walked around and got in it. And he climbs in beside me. He goes, so you got some sort of Jetta? So then I got to explain, which is all the madness. Yeah, your protege is probably more economical than the Phaeton.
Well, he says it's aged gracefully, $2,500 on a good day, as I was saying. But the budget for his cars, even though his income has increased, hasn't, because he and his wife are saving for a house, which is absolutely thing to do.
It's very cool. And you're going to need all that budget in Southern California.
Exactly. Yeah. And welcome to the We'll Spend Your Money For You podcast, despite what you tell us. But actually saving for a house is admirable and very worthy.
It is, for sure, yeah.
All right, so the dilemma here is there's no other car he can buy for $6,000 to $8,000 in cash that possesses all the desirable traits of the Protégé 5. Simple, manual, fun to drive, unique, practical, economical, naturally aspirated, moderately handsome, and reliable.
Four-door hatchback.
Four-door hatchback.
Yep.
Lastly, he says, for context, he's decent working with cars. He performs most of the work on their cars. He swapped the engine out on this Protégé 5. He's had to pull the head off his Miata, which he has, first-generation Miata. And in San Diego, he says, I'm right next to the beach with patches of wonderful curvy roads. At the end of the day, it's about how a particular car makes him feel on the way to or back from work. Wherever he's going. Yeah. Errands, doesn't matter.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, that is the disease. I mean,
we love driving
our cars. Doesn't always have to be in the right situation with the right sunshine and the... It doesn't have to.
It helps, but it doesn't matter all the time.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So you've heard the wish list. He's got the Miata, 97 Miata. He's got an 04 Highlander V6 and an 01 Camry. So what do you think? He's had a Celica. Ooh, he's had the Celica ST, 1989. Yep. He's had a Honda Del Sol.
A Honda Prelude as well. Some cool stuff on here, actually. Yeah, for sure.
Louis, I can think of three.
Can you? I've got a couple.
I'm glad. All right. So jumping into the choices here, because all these things are definitely tough to find, but they're even harder to find at the $6,000 to $8,000 level.
True, yeah.
This is between, I mean, the Phaeton is now a $10,000-plus car.
That's the
amount
of money.
It's not a $5,000 Phaeton. Yeah. Let's not kid ourselves.
It is exactly the poster child for what I've always said, is your $5,000 car probably isn't a $5,000 car because you're going to get it and have to buy fill-in-blanks.
You did it with the Spot the Mini.
Yes,
that's a one-off.
He was the exception to the rule that almost makes it true. No, the Phaeton now has about $10,000 in it total with the purchase price, including shipping and tires and everything that it's just... There's $10,000 sitting there.
It'll continue to run if you stop ramming it into snowbanks. I mean, the lights won't come on the dash if you don't drive into snowbanks.
True. At least I have video because, you know, that's the world we live in. Thank God I have video.
Just a thought.
I'm crippled, but thank God there's video.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a bad way to approach it. What's even worse about that is part of the reason I have video of that ridiculous idea is because I mentioned it in passing and my wife went, you should film that. And I thought, my last bastion of like maturity in my home. My son's 10. He's going to be like, let's do that with firecrackers.
Of course.
You know, so my wife was like the last one. She was like, you should film that. I was like, well, that settles it. I guess we're doing that. Anyway.
All right, Louis. I can think of the 2005 or 2006 Saab 92X. It's mostly identical to the Impreza wagon. It has three names of car companies in various places stamped on its body in various parts. So you do have that benefit.
Yeah.
Did you know that it won the highest IIHS safety awards when it came out? Now,
I did not know that, actually.
Todd had one.
Yeah.
And he loved it. It had a rebuilt engine, and it still ran great.
Yeah, it ran great. Yeah.
Now, did you have the linear or the aero?
I had the aero. I had the turbo.
Okay, so that is the turbo. Yeah. There is a linear version without the turbo, so they're a little bit cheaper. But as of now, they're getting older and, of course, higher mileage. Mm-hmm. But you could still probably find one in that range because
the linear for sure, the turbo probably.
Okay, all right.
The linear for sure. The linears were when I had mine, and the turbos were running around 10, and that's been years ago now.
And again, they've got high miles on them. But Louis is no stranger to miles, and he can work on the cars himself.
Totally. Yep.
But now you're into Subaru parts, which is maybe a blessing and a curse, but it kind of depends on who you are.
It's Lego for sure. Yeah.
So you've got that benefit, and actually the seats in the 92X were actually specific to those cars.
They're pretty good.
So it's mostly the Impreza interior, but there's a few touches.
GM through Saab, or Saab through GM, depending on where to look at it. GM owned 20 or 25% of Fuji Heavy Industries, the parent company of Subaru, at the time that that car was made. And this is the actual, I just can't believe this story. This is marketing 101 or 104. Anyway, the point is, they did a test thing for Saab.
Okay.
And Saab's market conclusion was they would get new buyers in if they sold an all-wheel drive, roughly $30,000 hatchback. That was apparently the conclusion.
Did it work?
So
Do we think it worked?
GM went, we can solve this. And they told Subaru, you're going to build this car that's the WRX, essentially. Mm-hmm. You're going to build it with a Saab suit on it. And what's nice about it, though, is they went through essentially the Subaru parts bin and pick and chose. And so it's got it's got upgraded seats, and it's got the steering rack from the STI, and it's got some pick and choose stuff that makes it actually a little bit better than WRX, but they don't have the WRX premium on them.
Yeah.
And they run that way. I think that's I did not pick that, but I think it's a great choice here. Really good.
Well, it meets unique. Mm. It is
totally
unique.
Yeah,
you don't
for sure.
see them around.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
the styling is actually pretty good. I think it actually has looked better over time.
Completely.
Better than the Impreza.
Completely, yeah.
That year.
Yep.
So it meets those things. It's economical. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they'll just run. You're going to have to put work into it. Todd's car was an anomaly because it had the rebuilt engine, but most of them are just running. Mm-hmm. They're going Subaru parts. My second car for you is any Mazda 3 hatchback. You talked about it. Mm-hmm. The car that came after yours, any Mazda 3 hatchback at that price, mm-hmm. at any engine, any configuration, as most Mazda 3 as you can get for that kind of money, mm-hmm. I think it's going to be great because actually the first generation of Mazda 3 were kind of roomy. They were pretty good-sized cars.
Yeah, they were good cars for sure.
But my third recommendation for you is the one I'm most proud of.
Okay.
Very
excited. I
like
the first
two,
but keep going. Yeah.
It is the 2002 to 2005 Lexus IS300 Sport Cross.
Look at you.
Now, this is a rear-wheel drive wagon that is stylish, mm-hmm. and I actually found you a 2002 automatic with 115,000 miles for $11,900. It's
okay.
over your price budget.
It is over your price, but yeah.
But it's also in San Diego.
Interesting.
I found it on Auto Tempest. I went searching.
It's
available. It's in Millennium Silver. Now,
which we don't love, but that's okay.
It's an automatic, but there is another one that is currently being bid on eBay. It's an 05, so it's a little bit newer.
Okay.
It's a Sport Cross manual with a current bid of $7,400. It looks a bit rough. This $11,000, $12,000 car mm-hmm. with $115,000, unique. It's a wagon, naturally aspirated. It checks all those boxes that you want. They're hard to find because didn't make very many of them.
True.
But I do think this does it for you. It's Lexus Sport Cross, the IS300 Sport Cross. You remember the instrument panel was very much inspired by watch designs,
it looks very much like a watch.
And
says the non-watch guy.
The interior actually still looks clean. It mm-hmm. works. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a smaller form factor. It's kind of the competitor to that WRX in a way.
It's very similar to the Saab you're talking about. Yeah, for sure.
It's a genuine wagon, rear-wheel drive wagon.
That's very good. You did really well today.
I'm all about the Lexus, Louis.
I'm quite impressed. Louis, I looked at your list and I thought, okay, I know that the reason you made this list of things it must have is because your current car has these things. My question to you is, why does your next car have to have them all?
Fair. That's a good question.
You didn't, for example, you didn't give me any reason and I broke this rule.
I mean, he knows what he likes.
Totally.
He knows what he needs.
But you didn't give
hand.
Me any reason to that you have to have a four-door.
Fair.
I don't. There's no kids. There's no dogs. There's nothing in the equation that says this is getting in the back regularly. Okay.
This thing climbs in the back wherever I go.
This small creature, you know, human or otherwise, is getting in the. There's none of that discussed.
Scary.
So I don't know what the story is there. So I actually broke that, but I did get you a lot of the other stuff. The other thing is, why naturally aspirated? I'm guessing because it's simpler and
probably.
Less prone to break. But
there's some longevity in there.
Yeah,
but modern turbos are great.
But modern turbos are not going to explode this minute. So next minute, but not this minute. So let me go with a couple of things.
Maybe in a Lancer minute, but not
well,
this
yeah,
minute.
Just don't get a Lancer. That's the solve. Problem solved.
That was a tiny shot.
The $6,000 to $8,000 puts you, just so you know, I have to go there, just at the bottom of the Fiesta ST market.
Mm,
I looked.
Yeah, true.
The ones that are available at your budget, like just over $8,000, like right at the top of your budget, are all pretty high miles. Like they're 150 and up. So do you want to do that? I don't know. Now, the fact that they have that many. In fact, I saw one that was like 2 years old with 150,000 miles on it. I was like, somebody just drove that like crazy. But
commute
they are
to both ends of the.
I guess
continent.
They are crazy fun, and they do everything you're talking about incredibly well. Yes, it's a turbo, but it's not a complex car. I think you would love that car, but it is a little out of your budget. So I have two others I want to mention that are right in your budget. The problem, if we want to go problem, is that neither one of them are naturally aspirated because little tiny hatchbacks are more fun with more power. That's what makes a hot hatch. So neither one of them are naturally aspirated, and both of them are two-door.
Oh.
The Fiat 500 Abarth Have your pick with $8,000. Just
that's true.
What's
that's
your true. Combination? I wanted in gray. No black, no red, no white. Take your pick.
They're available for
They're
sure.
They're out there like crazy. Yeah. And San Diego's a great place for that car. I love that car. That's just, it's small, great commute little car. You would like the 500 Abarth.
Mm.
And honestly, unlike the Fiesta where it's like, maybe I could get one. The Abarth is like, what would you like, sir? There's tons of them for your budget. Okay, so Fiat 500 Abarth. And I have to go there, Mini Cooper S.
Mm, yeah, I like it.
In fact, if you're a person that you're worried about hauling anything and you don't need your back seats much, do what I did or what I had on mine, which is take out your rear seats.
Yeah.
And just have a two-seat car that you can haul all. You'll be amazed how much space is in that car.
Well, you're making me think of the Clubman, like just the True. Elongated, True. Longer
yeah,
wheelbase.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
for
that
sure.
could work if you do need the extra space, fold
yeah,
the seats
down.
Yeah,
that's the unknown thing here is why, you know, why are you saying...
Carrier oil paintings or whatever you're carrying.
Yeah, I don't get the sense that you have to have a four-door, but you said you want a four-door. So I'm breaking that a little bit. I mean, a lot of the other stuff hasn't necessarily been. But those are the first two that I thought of that could be interesting. And then I have a wild card.
Okay.
Suzuki Kizashi.
Oh, my gosh. Are those... $6,000 to $8,000 now?
They're in that range.
Are they, can you find them is the question.
That's the thing. How are you going to find one? And then secondarily, how easily you're going to be able to get parts? I don't have answers to those two questions off the top of my head, but it's a cool little car.
There is the argument that if you work on a car yourself, you're more easily able to, instead of trying to find service for it, you can dig in and find the knowledge and dig into the forums and have a little bit easier time servicing it. That is the problem because you're going to have to source the parts and learn how to do it yourself.
Lovely in this, nicely in this lovely world of the internet, you're going to be able to find stuff. I know you are. It's just not going to be like, I have a Subaru, and you're going to walk in at every auto parts store. It's like, we have 10 of that. It's not going to be that. But honestly, that is an amazing little, very unique little sedan. You don't see them.
They're still good looking.
They're very good looking. Yeah. They come out in the winter here, inexplicably, in the Park City, Salt Lake area. When the winter hits, Pontiac Aztecs and Suzuki Kizashis just pop up.
Don't know why
they all
this
came
is.
Here. So anyway, because I guess, I don't know, all-wheel drive oddballs wound up here, including me. So that's something to look into. Again, I'm in total wild card territory, but the price is right. They are unique. You can get them in manual. It's all of the above. It's not a hatchback, though.
No,
so I break
it's not.
That. These are my ideas, though.
I just like the name, Kizashi.
Totally, yes. We love driving a great road, but we also enjoy time on track. No matter your skill level or interest, MotorsportReg.com makes it ridiculously easy to find and register for track events all across the country. With over 7,000 events annually, it's the most complete listing nationwide.
And if you're an event organizer, Motorsport Reg will help you fill every event with tools that automate your tasks, improve accuracy, and grow participation. Plus, there's a full-time support team who are there when you need them. Learn more and find events today at msreg.com/everydaydriver. Michael W. is in Surrey County, UK, who has been educated, he said, over the last 8 years or so. He's enjoying the banter on the podcast. Michael, thanks for writing to us. He's listening while he's on the M25 London Orbital Motorway, and he was amazed that you, Todd, lived in his county of Surrey as a kid. So it's just to the southwest.
Weybridge. I lived in Weybridge.
You did? Okay.
Yes. So I remember actually last time I was in London. Actually, no, that's not right. I left England in 83, and I went back in 2003.
Oh, wow.
20 years later, I left as almost an 11-year-old.
Okay.
I'm dating myself officially now. And I left, and when I came back, actually it was almost 10, doesn't matter. When I came back, it was because I was working on The Lord of the Rings, the third film, Return of the King.
That's cool. That's
and
cool.
I went back there. I worked two premieres. I worked Paris and I worked London. There were 13 premieres for that film worldwide. They literally did a world tour. They started in New Zealand and they came east.
Now, were you doing all those premieres?
That was
or
the
you
thing.
Had, you had
those
help.
Of us in post-production, we split up. It was a divide and conquer thing. Okay. I worked L.A., okay. London and Paris, which is a pretty nice swath.
Yeah.
I knew I had guys that I worked with that worked L.A. and New York. There was a Belgian one. There was one of the Scandinavian countries, and I'm getting it wrong, and one of you will know. One of the Scandinavian countries, the current queen translated Lord of the Rings for her language.
You're kidding me.
When she was like 20.
No kidding.
So she was guest of honor and they did a premiere there, but they did, you know, all over Europe. They worked, there were East, there was a Japanese premiere. There were 13 global premieres.
That was the premiere. What was the one you were telling me about where it was just a 15-minute chunk of movie that essentially
investors
needed to see?
That was the sizzle reel.
Okay. That's what I was thinking of. It was
world tour. This was the premiere. Okay. So I went back in 2003 and dropped into England 20 years after I left, and I actually had one half of a day off in London. And this is one of the most surreal experiences of my life. I may have shared it before, but I went to Waterloo, and I found the train that was going through Woking to Weybridge, and I got on that train, and I got off the train, the Weybridge train station, and literally just looked, because I've got a very visual memory. Looked around and went, home is that way. And
no
I walked to my house.
No way.
And knocked on the door. And the British woman that answered the door was like, I told her who I was. Of course, I'm this huge American guy showing up unannounced in the middle of her day. And I told her who I was. And she heard my last name and she went, oh, we bought the house from your parents.
No way. They still lived there.
Yes. So I got to walk around. It was one of the most surreal experiences of my life. Surrey, Weybridge, very cool.
That's awesome. All right. Well, Michael sent photos of the two new cars he has purchased for he and his wife. The first of all is the brand new Skoda Karoq replaces his wife's Volkswagen Scirocco. He said it was fun over 8 years and reliable.
Okay, cool.
Which is good news.
Yeah, very.
He says he was going to replace a very unreliable BMW 4 Series Grand Coupe, sadly in silver, with a Jaguar XF, but our podcast changed his mind and savings balance. So what he did was buy a Mazda CX-5 a year ago, which has been totally reliable. And he says it's just as good as all the neighbors, Porsches and BMWs and Jags and Audis and Mercedes in Epsom Downs, Surrey, where he lives.
Now, what I find interesting is, and I'm kind of boggled by this, Michael, you listen to this podcast, and it sounds like based on this description, you made a intelligent, budget-saving car choice. Normally, this goes the other way. Yeah. You know, I was going to buy a Miata and I got a McLaren. I don't know. I tripped and fell.
Exactly.
I think it's great that you bought this CX-5. I love the fact that I'm going to come back to it later. I love the fact that you were comparing and contrasting it with your neighbor's cars and going, I just made a better choice. I just made a valid, relevant choice that is equivalent to your cars and spent a fraction of the money. I love that you love it. That's great.
Michael says he's a former production manager for a group of car magazines and he lives opposite to a person, he says he's the advertising boss for Classic Porsche magazine, who's trying to persuade Michael to buy a 911, but his budget of $15,000 to $20,000 retirement fund to spend on a classic car will not go that far.
Okay.
So we're looking for a starter classic Porsche that is in really a starter budget.
Yeah.
It's almost a starter budget for any car, not to mention just a classic car.
Yeah.
And he says, if I were to get a weekend classic car to drive around the lanes of Kent and Surrey and Sussex in the UK, which Porsche would we choose?
Okay.
Is the Boxster an obvious choice? A friend of his has suggested a 914 because, of course, he's restoring one. But he was thinking of a modern classic, just 10 to 20 years old and maybe slightly newer. Mileage is only 2,000 a year, if that. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, there's cheap 924s and 944s. And actually, the front-engined long nose Porsches, well, the 928 is starting to go back up, but the 924s and 944s haven't really gone back up yet.
Not into craziness yet.
I mean, everybody's tracked the daylights out of the 944s and ground those into the tracks of the earth.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, they're 10 grand and less, you know, and they're still that way. So he says, I have no idea what I'm doing mechanically, but loads of Porsche specialists in the area where he lives, as well as being, you know, he's got the opposite garage.
Yeah.
He's got a Saab specialist who used to own a thirsty 9.3 convertible, but he loved it. What do we think about
the
classic starter Porsche?
What I find funny about this is the fact that you live across the street from the advertising boss for a classic Porsche magazine, and he's trying to get you to buy. Wait, let me think. Hang on. What is it he wants to? Oh, a classic 911? Can't imagine. Why?
I know. Well, I'm surprised that he's not actually helping you with all of his inside connections if he really wants to. Like, here, I found the deal of the century, and I got the guy for you, and here's the... I found the car for you, that kind of thing. If he really wants you to, don't just, well, here, buy a copy of our magazine.
I ran a couple of places unexpected with this.
Okay.
I love the starter idea here, but the big thing that I take away from this as I look at it, Michael, is you are not a mechanic in and of yourself. And this isn't a car you're not looking for a project. That's what I find very clear in this email. You're not looking for, I'm about to retire, find me something to tinker with. That's not in here.
Right.
I'm looking to retire and I want to buy an investment car. That's also not here. You want a car you can drive. that when you go out into the garage, it's ready to be driven. It can go get driven somewhere and you can enjoy it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So I actually do think that the Boxster is way up there on this list. Because if you get an early one, it's going to run. And the issues that are out there are known issues, and there are parts to fix it if you need to fix it. But we drove one for our cheap sports cars episode a couple seasons back. We had a 370Z because it's been the same for like a millennia. We had the first-gen Boxster, and we had a C4 Corvette, and they were all under 10 grand. All of them. Okay, so they're out there. And in England, as we've talked about before, a lot of times these cars drop even faster. So I think the Boxster is a great idea. If, here's where I'm going to go. If you get a Porsche to solve this, I think it is the Boxster. But I have two other recommendations, and they're not Porsches.
Oh, interesting. I was thinking 912, because 912s are still kind of unloved in a way, even though people are retrofitting them with electric drivetrains, and they're just buying them and enjoying and thinking, well, I still get that kind of 911 feel. The power just isn't there. Okay. Yeah. Now, this is me talking. I'm the guy that wants power. I want power in all my little cars.
Yes, you do.
I want power.
Yes.
So take that with a grain of salt. But I like Todd's suggestion about Boxster, but, you know, it does rain in the UK, right?
Yeah, but Boxsters do have convertible tops.
Yeah, but how about just get the top? Just get the Cayman.
Okay. He is clearly going to drive it on the nice days, though. But first Cayman, you're right. That's excellent.
And it does seem like it's a foregone conclusion, but I say that because we're still in the sweet spot of Caymans have come down in price, the early ones, the 987s. Yeah. They're still very raw and fun to drive. Don't be afraid of what the internet tells you about the IMS thing, because we're still in the sweet spot of companies being able to either rebuild your engine or rebuild it with the IMS kit, there's plenty of engines around. It's not like it's so classic that, parts are going to be hard to find on that thing.
That's very true.
It's still kind of a modern car, which is what you're looking for. And so go early, go 06. Mm. Why not the first year they came out? Mm. And because the internet has scared everybody and told them to be like, stay away from those cars. I'll bet you could find not even the 3.4. I bet you could go the first 2.5 or 2.7, excuse me.
So you could go the actual base
the
original
actual
Cayman.
The actual base Cayman for inexpensive. I mean,
I'm sure.
Inexpensive.
Yeah, for sure.
Buy one with low miles, just drive it and
have
enjoy
money left over, yeah.
Now, of course, the internet will also tell you it's the cars that sit, which have the problems, but there's no way of quantifying that. Mm-hmm. Porsches like to be driven, but if you've got the hardtop, you could drive it more than you think, probably.
I also bet if he bought somebody else's well-taken-care-of high-mileage one that's in the IMS danger zone, but it's high-mileage when he buys it, kind of like Chance's 911.
Sure, sure.
If it was going to have IMS, it would have already.
Yeah.
So now you can just drive it, even if you don't drive it that much.
Well, you also said you've got specialists everywhere around you.
Yeah, true, true, true.
Okay, something goes, and you need to lean on some people for help to rebuild or... Okay, then you have a great running Porsche that's rebuilt, ready to rock. I don't see the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Going anything older than there. Yes, you could go the front engine Porsches, but going anything older, well, that introduces parts. And, well, now I got to replace the door panel because I want to do some restoration on that. Well, that's rusty, and now I'm into bodywork and paint and that kind of thing. We both want you to have a car ready right now. The first-gen Caymans are just old enough where they're not quite classics, but they're just outside of everybody's, sort of want zone. We all want the newer stuff. I admit to that. But how about the 2.7, that first gen, very first car, go drive that, live with it, experience it. I'm curious to hear your other two suggestions here.
I have two others. A couple of things that really struck me in your email, Michael, that I want to come back to. First off, you said you used to be the production manager for a group of car magazines. So that tells me you are aware of cars in general.
Absolutely.
Oh, so it's not just because you have this Porsche neighbor and Porsche friend. You're aware of cars in general. That struck me. I think it struck me is the fact that in the face of this, in the face of all these big brand and badge snob cars in your neighborhood, you bought a Mazda CX-5 because you looked at the options and went, that seems like everything I need, and you love it. Mm-hmm. Those two things informed me to go two different directions. First off, I'm going to go a place that may seem obvious. In fact, it is obvious. You like the Mazda CX-5. Why are you not at least considering a Miata?
Fair. Okay. All right.
Because what I'm thinking for you is you want to be a guy that you want to spend retirement money well and then enjoy what you spent money on. You don't want it to break. You want it to be reliable.
True.
This is a Miata.
True.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think my favorite for you is a car I know you can get in the UK. For years, it was one of the cars when you guys would do surveys in the UK about people's most loved cars. It was at the top.
Okay.
It is a modern classic. It is an alternative to all the Porsche discussion. Mike, get yourself a Honda S2000 and enjoy. That is
point.
A fantastic modern classic. It is great to drive, convertible. It was cutting edge technology when they first released them, which means 10 years later when they stopped selling them, which is now 10 years ago, except for the digital dash, it still feels pretty modern inside.
Hmm.
This is a car you want to enjoy. It's going to just run. And while it isn't a Porsche, I think any Porsche purist, any real Porsche guy is going to look at that car and be like, that's an intelligent choice. Great gearbox, really good engine, well-engineered.
For
that,
sure.
That is, honestly, that is a Porsche style of thinking in that car.
Okay, you've made me think of one other that I've got to insert here, Michael. Could you get your hands on a ZR1 Corvette from the early 90s? Because they're so cheap. And because the engine was engineered by a British company, Lotus.
It is a Lotus engine. You are making please ask me about my car choice there. If you're driving that around in Surrey, somebody's going to ask.
That's my thinking. It'll run.
Yeah.
It's angry and loud, and it's the opposite of everybody in your neighborhood.
It is special. I will give it that.
I mean, it is a full-on muscle car, and it'll run.
Yeah.
It'll just be great. They're like $19,000, $20,000 in the U.S. right now. It's insane. Why are we not all buying ZR1 Corvettes?
Yeah, could you find one? Watch our American original piece. That car gets a nice section in that film because we were genuinely surprised by it. That is quite a cool car.
I mean, I don't know if you can find one. It'd be a hard search, and I don't know how easy it is to live with in that area of the country.
Yeah.
I don't know, but just a question.
I know the S2000s are there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they are.
If you've got more cars in the garage space, and we suspect you probably do, then you need to protect it with a custom car cover from Covercraft. We recommend the NOAA Custom Car Cover. They're each made to fit your car perfectly, and they resist moisture, but also breathe to eliminate condensation. It has four-layer protection for all weather conditions, and it protects your car from UV rays as well. The NOAA covers even have a soft inner layer, are made entirely in the USA, and come with a 4-year warranty.
In the worst winds we've seen, the NOAA cover stays put. Todd had one on the Lancer, and it kept the paint pristine in all conditions. I wore one out after 9 years of daily use on my Audi Avant, and people always asked how I kept it so nice. Plus, you can defend your interior against kids and dogs and spills and any weekend adventure you might have in the mud and snow with custom seat covers from Covercraft.
You can have the nicest car all winter long with help from our friends at Covercraft. And you can get 10% off your custom car cover and any Covercraft product by using the code EVERYDAY right now at covercraft.com. And it even ships for free. Follow the link from our sponsors page or go directly to covercraft.com to keep your car looking its best.
When we're searching for cars for you, local or nationwide, our searches start with Auto Tempest. Instead of searching each car shopping site separately, you can enter all your parameters into Auto Tempest one time and then search them all at once.
With Auto Tempest, you enter your search one time and see local or nationwide results from Cars.com, TrueCar, eBay, and many more. Or you can jump to Craigslist, AutoTrader, or CarGurus without entering anything new. And they just added a link to Facebook Marketplace, too.
Auto Tempest can help you find your next new or used car if there's a dozen in your neighborhood or two in the country. So if you're doing your drive homework, chasing your dream car, or just looking to feed the disease, head to AutoTempest.com. All the cars, one search. Question over here from Facebook. Nick Elaine on Facebook drove a 1963 Volvo. He says his first impression after, you know, how does a choke work?
that is something that's you just don't see anymore. That is true, yeah.
He says upon reflection was, wow, manual brakes are weird.
Mm.
So the question is, what other old car quirks are strange or scary to you? And what is it about modern cars do we think our grandkids will find alien?
Ooh, that's a good couple part question.
Yeah. Well, you know, we started to get used to that when we drove all those early 911s, as a matter of fact, kind of tying into our last debate for Michael there.
Yeah.
And the manual input on everything is what's so strange because we're not used to feeling mechanical interaction.
Mm-hmm.
None of us are. Mm-hmm. We're used to feeling products that are engineered to take that feeling out of them. I think Lexus is one of the best examples to take the feel of a mechanically engaging thing out of the equation. You don't want to feel that. You want to be cosseted. You want to be enclosed, ensconced in this bubble of
whatever.
Nonconformity. I don't know. So it was the mechanical interaction. When you drive a car without synchros, you feel gear teeth touching. You hear them and you feel, whoa, okay, that's bad. The car didn't like that. Mm-hmm. That's where all that personality comes from, which ties into what Todd and I look for in modern cars. Because if car companies have left that feeling somewhere lurking within the gearbox or lurking within the steering, and we kind of feel like, oh, well, that ties into the car's personality.
Because now
I'm feeling the raw elements of how this car is put together engage with my driving style. That's what's interesting about old cars. And old cars, well, that's just how they had to work. We didn't have giant wiring harnesses and airbags in every corner and cup holders everywhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was just, you felt that's just how we built the thing. That's just what it feels like.
Along these lines, linking to the Porsche film, is floor hinged pedals.
It's not just a Porsche thing, but if you
haven't driven a car with floor hinged pedals and you get in one that has them, it feels incredibly foreign. Mm-hmm. Because you're not just foot pushing toward – what happens with modern pedals hanging from the ceiling, if you will, is when you're pushing toward the firewall, you're just pushing directly toward the firewall. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But now when you have a floor hinge pedal, you actually have to tilt your ankle down toward the floor.
It makes heel and toeing a very different exercise.
Completely different. And so that, if you're not used to it, you get in any car with floor hinge pedals, you will know instantly, and that definitely feels different. As far as modern stuff, what weird oddities – well, the manual transmission for one.
Manual, but our grandkids are going to say, you actually steered the car yourself.
Let's hope they don't.
Why would you do
this? Let's hope they're aware.
I hope so.
I hope what they have to say is, oh, cool, you have one of those cars you drive yourself. That's what I hope they say.
Okay, so
versus
manual crank
they
windows.
Never see them.
I asked my niece and nephew, when you want to tell somebody next to you to roll the window down, you pull up under a stoplight.
Yeah.
You want to tell them their blinker's out.
The motion for it. Yeah,
what is that motion? And they both did the wind crank motion. And I said, where did you get that from? Because neither of you grew up with manual windows.
Crank windows. Yeah.
My sister and brother-in-law, they had a big Ford truck with power windows and Buicks and just whatever.
Does their ancient Saab 9.3 have crank windows? I doubt it.
No, it's got power windows.
Of course it does.
But it's on the center console, European cars, I think. Was it?
Plus it's a Saab, so it's got the key down there.
Saab,
too. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, so it's the Saab quirkiness. But they both did that motion. I said, how do you know?
Isn't that interesting?
I mean, you could just wave your hand and say, try to say, put your window down, that kind of thing. But nobody holds their finger out and pushes down on invisible, imaginary power window switch. Nobody does that.
You're right. One of the things I actually think is really cool in resto mods that they're doing now, a couple of things that's cool, but speaking directly to this, is we were in some of the cars at the Griot's Garage and other cars like this we've seen where you get in a car that originally had crank windows. Mm-hmm. And now you can have an electric window put inside, but the actuator is the crank.
Yes.
You push the crank down for it to go down, and you pull it up for it to go up. So it's like an extra large switch, if you will, but it looks organic to the original car.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's also like the save icon on all of our software. Nobody's using floppy disk, but we all know what the save icon is.
It's crazy.
Derek Miller says, hey, man, how are you? He says, any tips we can share on learning about weight transfer to improve track driving skills? His specific question is, I know what you have. You have that cool Volvo V60 right now.
Polestar, yeah.
The Polestar that's all-wheel drive. He says, okay, he wants to transition from tracking an all-wheel drive car to a higher horsepower rear-wheel drive car. What does he need to worry about? A couple of things. First off, Derek, I know you've driven rear-wheel drive on tracks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, so think back to that. The big thing is that all-wheel drive typically – it's actually wanting to save you when you give it power. When you get to the back of a corner and you give it power, and if you put your foot in it, the front wheels are going to try. Some cars are better than others. Things like the GTR and the Evo are fantastic at it. But generally, an all-wheel drive car is going to try to find its way out of the corner because you asked for power. Your rear-wheel drive car fundamentally isn't going to do that. Too much power, the back's going to go, what are we doing up here? It's going to come around and see you. Okay? And the more power you have, the more likely it is to do that. So the smooth application of power is the reason people leaving Cars and Coffee hit crowds.
Right.
Because they have big, powerful rear-wheel drive, and they put their foot to the firewall, and they think, I got it. No, you don't.
Exactly.
That is a light pole on a bunch of people. So don't do that. So it's about application of power coming out. When you are – you're probably going to get front engine. So obviously the other things generally in tracking apply. You want to – if you can, break in a straight line. And then you want to watch your application of power on the back end. I'm massively simplifying. There are good videos out there for this, but that's my start.
Thumbing My Way on Instagram says, new EVs from GM, specifically the Hummer, is coming apparently, as an EV. And Lincoln, through their partnership with Rivian, do we really need such huge vehicles to be so quick? Do we need this?
Need?
This read about 0 to 60 in 3 seconds for the Hummer. This is to be verified. At this recording, the Hummer EV has not yet been revealed.
True.
We'll see what happens with future specs and stats here. He says, more torque than a Brabus CLS. Well, you just touched on it. Cars have never been about need. If they were, we wouldn't have anything fun.
We'd all still be driving vanilla K cars from the 80s. Yeah,
I've told you before, why was the second car built? To go faster than the first car ever built. This is why. I mean, AMGs and all the high horsepower wars of the Mercedes and BMWs and the German cars. Yeah. Well, they just keep coming out with more horsepower. How about the pony cars and the Mustangs and the Camaros and the, Hellcat, everything? Do we need that? No, but it sells cars.
Yeah.
And so if you can have something, we met an owner. Well, I don't think we met him, but we heard about an owner who bought a new Corvette Z06. Mm-hmm. Didn't drive it, didn't do anything.
Yep.
And instantly had it tuned to make 800 horsepower.
Yeah.
Literally. We're thinking, have you experienced the 650 part first? Do you understand how much that is before you go to 800?
I want to make sure we land this. Had not driven the car. Had it delivered from the dealer to the place to give it 150 more horsepower and torque.
Without ever having experienced the first 650 horses.
And then pulled it into a Cars and Coffee at I am terrified speeds and parked it and proceed to brag about all the power it had.
Now, I'm not saying that all this power is just for bragging. In some cases, it's...
We're not saying it's not.
I'm not saying it's not. But it sells cars. In the case of the German sedans, you want to have power to go fast on the Autobahn because you can. It's wonderful. If you ever get to experience that, it's great. I've always said... It's the black Audi that's going to pass you at 195.
Yeah.
You better get out of the way. You think, I'm cool. I'm in my first.
I'm the big dog. Yeah, here he comes.
A blacked out Audi going almost 200? Yeah, it'll happen. But I'm thinking it's in those cases for use. In the case of the Hummer, for torque, the brand that they had already cultivated needs to be in charge. It needs to be.
Yeah, true.
It needs
true,
to
true.
Land with a thud and back and... we can do all this towing with it or whatever they want to do, even though it's not necessarily towing that's the greatest for electric motors, but, that's a whole other subject. I'm just saying it has to meet the brand's perception.
I also wonder if these big, powerful SUVs and trucks, electric, if there's a hope we can have our cake and eat it too, meaning we want all the big power of the biggest, most powerful, really impressive Hellcatted out trucks. And by the way, did you know I'm green? All I'm burning is electrons. And so there's that. We keep all of the I can beat you into the earth demeanor that goes with truck ownerships, but yet also be green. And I think that, plus you've joked about it. In the 60s, we were selling cars on sheer horsepower and straight line speed, and now with electrics, we're right back there. We're longtime users and big believers in Griot's Garage car care products. That's because while many other brands are just rebranded versions of the same few products, Griot's Garage has developed, manufactured, and bottled bespoke car care products since 1990.
In fact, many of their first customers were collector cars displayed at Pebble Beach. Griot's is a family company based in Washington State, still dedicated to having the best products for every car and every budget. As a matter of fact, I learned my certified Paul-owned car care style from Griot's.
We've both used Griot's Garage car care products on our own cars for over 20 years, and we wouldn't use anything else. If you're wondering how to get going, they offer free training and techniques through their videos and website, and starter kits to help your car look its best.
Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed, and all liquid products are made in the USA. They offer a 100% lifetime guarantee, so give them a try.
When you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, use the code EVERYDAY for 10% off your order. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com. Icky Yada says to me, he wants to know if I would consider a cheap MR2 or a Fiero for a winter car so I can have at least some form of mid-engine dynamics in the winter. Honestly, I'm not obsessed with having mid-engine dynamics in the winter. I just want rear-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm. Sure,
I miss having that. My problem with the Lotus, besides the fact of not wanting to screw it up because it's expensive to replace everything on the body, besides that, is the fact that my Lotus does not have a limited slip differential, and I would want that on my rear-wheel drive car. My FRS had one. It was a decision maker. It was great. I love the RF for the same reason. I'm not that interested in the mid-engine as I am the rear-wheel drive, and so I'm pondering what might be next because I want to be driving something rear-wheel drive all year. Again.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you also answered Rick Dreyer's question here. This is more of a fun question. He says, but what is the best rear-wheel drive car for drifting through snow-filled empty parking lots? Any car that you have, but ultimately it's one you can turn all the traction control completely off and ideally manual, to be honest. So that's like Chevy SS. That's like, you know, an FRS. It's a Miata. It's those kinds of things. It's not necessarily the size or weight of the car. It's just the fact that you can have full control over it. So when you are on the edge of control, nothing is kicking in trying to overcome what it thinks is an emergency.
Especially in snow, yes. Devin Brower has a difficult, but I want to tackle it, track daily crush. The Miata RF, only cleaned in the world's worst car wash.
Yeah, I did see this.
A certified, Paul-owned, and washed Fiesta ST cleaned only with Griot's products. Ding, ding. And a Veloster N detailed by our local detail shop, who he's saying he assumes is not nearly as good as you are. Our local detail folks over at Summit are fantastic.
He's fantastic, yes.
Clayton does a great job.
Yeah, he does.
Okay, track daily crush. This is good. You know what? I'm going to go here. You're going to be surprised. I'm going to track the RF. Because world's worst car wash, what do I care? I'm tracking it. Then I don't have to worry about the fact that you dinged me or that has rubber on it or who cares.
Right.
I'll track the Miata RF. I'll daily the Veloster N because I trust our local detail folks. And I hate to crush a pristine Fiesta ST, but what's happening.
All my work that I put into that.
I'm sorry, man.
The heck? Our J. Doherty 787 says, what would my six-year-old son be more excited about, an ND2 Miata RF or a 2012-2015 Boss 302 Mustang? Depends entirely about what you two are going to go do. Are you going to take it to a car show? Are you going to take it on canyon drives? I mean, if you get the Mustang, don't take it to a car show. But, you know, what are you going to go do with a car?
I see where you
went. Are you going to do burnouts? Like, what is he more into? Are you, you know, cornering? That kind of thing. You've got to ask that question first before you understand. You know, yes, the loud noises and the burnouts and all that stuff coming out of the back of the Mustang is awesome. But do you have the ability to take advantage of the Miata?
I'd be curious to see where your son is and what his proclivities are. Because if he's in that stage of big trucks and construction equipment and that kind of stuff, big loud noises and stuff that has anger and menace about the feel of it, then I think the boss wins. But if he's in a place where what turns his head or excites him is to see the flowing lines of an exotic sports car, then the RF would win. I'm not sure where your son is in that. Do you see Andrew Stein's question? I want to talk about this for a minute from Facebook.
Okay. All right.
Do you see this one? He's curious about why so many car journalists are so quick to take the latest car, whatever it is.
Oh, yes.
Take it directly to the track and judge it based entirely on its track performance.
Yeah, I did see this.
He sees this all the time. And you're right. You see this all the time. He's never understood what the heck is going on, why this is the case. Since that's obviously not the way most anyone that buys a car will ever drive it. And then he said, does this do some cars a disservice because they're not great on track and they weren't meant to be great on track? This is an interesting point, Andrew. I think the reverse is true, too. And James May has spoken to this at length. The cars that were designed to be great on the Nürburgring often aren't good enough on your local road because they're too stiff.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're too focused to be a track car. And by the way, have you noticed my commute? So this can go the other way. The reason people go to the track is twofold. One, if you're going to take a car with incredible performance, where are you going to actually have a chance of touching that performance? It's probably not your local canyon road.
True.
So they take it to the track. Also, the fact that if you're a magazine or whatever, you have the money to close down the track and no one will bother you.
True.
And the last one is I'm going to call the YouTube effect. I think this problem is getting worse because what people want to see when they watch a video is they want to see the car at the edge of itself, ideally sideways, ideally pouring smoke.
True.
Very difficult to do that in a public place, which is the reason you and I don't drift on camera.
Unless we've got the right environment to do it.
Exactly.
We're not doing it on public roads.
So this is why we're not doing that. But it is spectacular to look at. Chris Harris has made a career on the fact that a car going sideways billowing smoke is really cool to see.
It's compelling. Yeah.
So this is the reason we run out to the track. I think a lot of cars are undermined by a track first mentality. One of the reasons we try to actually take them out on roads is even when we're taking like American Original or 50 Years of the 911, cars that are designed to be able to be great track cars, we still want to put them on roads and go, this is the car in the real world. Even if we're driving quite quickly, we still want to do that.
Very true.
Important, but it isn't as look at me at the edge possible, if you will, as if you took it to the track. So these are big factors. One car I can think of that I think was undermined by this approach, the BMW i8.
In what sense? You think it does need to be taken to the track?
I don't think it's a track car. But
no,
I think the
no.
nature of it is, well, it's a sports car. Let's take it and put it against the track.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do some track. I don't think that's its intention at all. So what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Even though it has sporting looking. It's an electric sports car. Kind of.
Oh, you touched on this briefly, but I'll add it as reason 3.5. And that is if the car is designed specifically with, hey, these numbers, and we've designed it a certain way, and it's not quite developed on the ring, but it is promoted by the company as this is the fun new hot thing, then, you know, like the Supra.
It has been tracked
and it has been raced, but it's not necessarily positioned as get your high performance, you know, this is going to be the fastest thing on track. No, it's a fun high performance sports car, but it, you know, so we have to take it to the track. We have to understand that, but we also need to drive it over here like you're going to be normally driving it.
Hopefully,
canyon roads. That's why we put it with the other two competitors. So if it's a car designed for it, you're going to take it to the track. Company claims this is what you do with it.
Let's go see how you did.
Let's go find out. All right. So what do we think is the better move? Sean Clark asks about the Tesla strategy or the Rivian strategy.
Ooh, fighting words.
Tesla is making their own cars. Indeed. Mm-hmm. Rivian is making their own cars as seemingly a proof of concept than working with other manufacturers to make the product. Still a little bit remains to be seen. They took the old Mitsubishi factory in Normal, Illinois, and they have retrofitted it. And so they will be building their cars there. And of course, all that expertise is pouring in the door at Rivian, from design to engineering, marketing, all that stuff.
Yeah,
and they are truly building a car company. But as Tesla has found out, making cars is hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Apple found this out real quickly. It's not just one product with a few circuit boards and stuff some components in and kick it out the door. I'm oversimplifying.
Yes.
But it's lots of products that have to be perfect. And at Apple standards, they're looking at, you know, any other car. I won't name names, not to denigrate cars, but they're looking at any other car and be like, well, that wouldn't be up to Apple standards. We have to make it like this. It has to be milled out of a 20-axis mill out of titanium.
Think about Mr. Dyson, the vacuum king.
Yes.
Decided he was going to make a car and then went, this is expensive and difficult. I'm not doing it. And that was years in.
By the way, I saw the British government pulled back their investment money out of him because
you would think.
He decided to not build cars because they're hard.
Yeah.
The vacuum cleaner can have a few parts that don't quite fit, or maybe it just comes apart a little. I don't know, but a car can't.
Does Rivian become, for electric cars, what Lotus has been for gas cars? Where what they make is niche and well-respected, but where they make their money is making Rivian versions of the Ford products, the Chevy products.
That's a tough one because of the nature of the products they're making. Mm. It's a high-volume product, a pickup truck. Whereas Lotus is making very niche kinds of enthusiast cars. If Lotus built this is our off-road pickup truck for everybody, they're suddenly in a more of a commodity mindset rather than. So in that sense, no, I say no, because Rivian's making pickup trucks and SUVs, which are the big sellers.
Yes, but isn't the pickup truck an SUV buyer that wants to buy a full-size electric kind of a niche buyer anyway?
Now they are. Right now, yes.
I'm
for the future,
here.
Unknown. But right now, yes. Very true. But as far as engineering services, they're pulling all the talent out of Detroit, to be honest.
Interesting.
They're poaching everybody to come work for this cool new startup. And, you know, but they're going to find out building cars is hard, but they've got the resources and they're in the right location of the country to be able to pull the talent in.
Evan wrote in, you see this? ER Zipperer. That is the winner of Spot the Mini.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote in and said, okay, assuming you have a boring daily. Are you not driving Spot? What happened? Anyway, assuming you have a boring daily, would we rather have a Miata or a Fiesta ST as the fun weekend car? He says he thinks rear-wheel drive convertible seems more fun, but he's saying is the practicality of something like the Fiesta ST mean you would just drive it more? My question is, why can't you drive the impractical sports car more? Why can't you just go, I'll go get groceries again? What's wrong with that? Here's the thing. If you really do have a boring daily, I think you need to go rear-wheel drive for the fun car. That is, rear-wheel drive remains for me the holy grail. That is just a dynamics thing, especially if you get something that's also got good steering feel. That doesn't feel like anything else out there. And the Fiesta ST, as much as I love it, I've said two strikes against it tonight. Much as I love the Fiesta ST, anything rear-wheel drive that is well set up, and that's Miatas and 86s and Caymans, and let's go on. Let's go on through all the sports car, muscle cars. Go through all of them. Rear-wheel drive is crazy fun. If it's just a fun car, go rear-wheel drive.
Hurley.Josh on Instagram was informed by his wife today, who has never shown any interest in cars, that the Kia Stinger looks really cool. I guess that means we're car shopping now. Please help.
Yay!
You're screwed, buddy. No, he goes on to say, is there a better way to spend $3,500 on a true weekend sports car than a well-kept first-generation NA Miata?
Ooh.
It's going to be tough.
That's way up there.
I mean,
there.
We're talking maybe MR2s, maybe, but well-kept? It's going to be a tough ask for that kind of money. You know, you go up to five or huge budget of 5,000, we could maybe find a little bit more. But, I mean, maybe some Corvette, maybe. But that's a tough
it's
ask.
It's
going
to need work.
Yeah. That's a tough ask.
That is a tough one.
So, Josh, let us know which flavor of Stinger that you guys end up buying, because we're curious.
Yeah, we're buying Stingers. Moat Jeremy on Instagram says he just watched the Spec Racer Ford video. I hope you enjoyed that, man. Thank you for that. He's asking about, was it really majorly different because we were now sitting in the center of the car? Mm. He's asking if that is much of a change. It's interesting you bring that up because that actually didn't ever strike me. And I think it has to do with the scale of the car. I think if it, because it feels about two-thirds size. It's about, well, we're referencing it. It's about the size of an NA Miata, maybe a little bit smaller. It's a small car. Mm-hmm, and because of that, your center seating position wasn't a lot different than you would be from the mirrors of a normal car. In like driving position, you like stick your arm out. You're about as far out as the edge of the mirror. That's about how far out the car went from either side. You're so centrally located and the car's so little, it was pretty organic. I think if you were driving a large single-seater, as there have been every now and then, somebody does some design of a huge car with a single seat in it, I think it becomes a much bigger issue. So many of the single seaters are small, like the Caterham, for example, isn't exactly center seat, but it almost feels like it.
Almost.
You sight the corner so easily, it becomes subconscious.
Okay, there's a question on Instagram from CJSmith6, who asks, why do we think mild hybrids haven't caught on yet? Chevy Volt just went out of production.
Yep.
It seems to be the most logical next step, especially for all of us enthusiasts. He's asking, will the hybrid 911 be a mild hybrid? And his guess is because they typically aren't as efficient as, well, HEVs and EVs. I have two schools of thought on this. The first is, what's the point? You're running your gas engine, like a Volt, like an Insight, to charge your batteries, but it has to run harder because now I'm trying to drive the car like I would normally an internal combustion engine car.
Yeah.
So my range is so limited, I'm using gas anyway. What's the point? On the other hand, for commuters, what a great idea.
Yeah.
Because I get to use up this range, 40 miles or however much range I have, just in pure electric mode. But if I need a real car and we're going on a road trip, I'm okay.
That's
it's
what
a
I always
real
loved about
car.
It. That's what I always loved about that idea, yeah.
And I think it's because of that, it's like a reversible belt or a reversible jacket or furniture that turns into a reversible something. It grows as your kid grows. Turn it into the desk and then the school thing. And then, no, I just want my thing to be the thing. And that's why products that aren't that, I think, don't sell as well. Cars are just big, expensive products.
You've mentioned this before.
It's because they're not quite fully one way or the other. If it's all electric, here's my range. I'm doing all the electric thing. If it's a Hellcat engine, let it be, let it rip. 797 horsepower, let's let it rip. And I'm whatever. you see, I'm using this as extremes.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's why electrics will eventually catch on further. Whereas the PHEVs, the HEVs.
The middle ground.
You know, right in this middle ground, like, what are you? But, you know, people's needs change, and you could argue that. You could say, well, you're commuting during the week, and then you're road tripping on the weekend, so it's the perfect car.
Okay.
Well, maybe not, because it still just doesn't know what it wants to be from a dynamics perspective.
Very interesting. While we're talking electrics, Scott Berger asked on Facebook, would I consider getting a cheap electric car to replace the Lancer? At the moment, I'm going to get nothing to replace the Lancer. That should hurt from that wound for a minute. Plus, I'm still going to unload that car, but it's a whole other thing. He's asking about suggestions, and he's saying, wait a minute, why don't I get a Fiat 500e, small, light, and under $3,000? You're right. Here's the thing.
Are they that cheap?
According to Scott, I actually didn't look them up. But here's the thing I know, that when those cars were first out, it was all about trying to balance the emissions and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and so
the
as a result, they were leasing them to people. I remember in LA, this was very popular, leasing them to people for like $90 a month.
Nothing. Oh my gosh.
Clearly losing money on them, but who cares, because it all comes out in the calculations. So
that's dinner out.
In LA it is, for sure. So Fiat 500e doesn't interest me, but I will say this, Scott. I can't help myself but be intrigued by the BMW i3. I don't like it at 45, 50 grand, but at 10, 15, I'm like, do I want one?
So, who wants one of these?
So I've thought about it. I don't know that I'll go that route because of some other considerations, but I seriously have considered it. So we'll see. At some point, I got to be honest, at some point I do want to own a fully electric car, because I want to talk about that just in life and with you guys and all of those things. And I think getting a used one may be the play, because it's like all other tech that is brand new tech. In 5 minutes, it's no longer brand new tech.
Yeah. Well, let's see what Bolts do in the coming years.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens to prices of those.
And those
things
are really good. Yeah. But the thing about the i3 is at least it's rear-wheel drive. It's rear-wheel drive on like tiny little ice skate tires, but it is rear-wheel drive.
Wow, huge wide tires on an i3. What's going on here?
You're going to stance it.
Can you imagine? All right, last question for me from an eclectic car. Speaking of 500s, he lives in Houston, Texas, looking for a more fun daily, really likes the idea of a 500 Abarth because it's a small exotic and seemingly lots of fun.
Very cool.
He feels like it's not the right car for where he lives. There are zero twisty roads, as you know, growing up in Houston.
Yeah, Houston's a lot of straight and flat, and lots of big trucks around here, too.
Yeah, so what do we recommend for a car in these conditions? And he prefers something more special than a standard Mustang and Camaro. The budget is around the same as a used Abarth. Well, if you go slightly used, that range is now from $10,000 to $20,000. So sure. I say somewhere in the hot hatch arena with a nice turbo. The Abarth is that, which is great. I don't see a reason why you can't, to be honest. But I think you're wanting some punch, some straight line, on-ramp kind of punch. So something in the hot hatch range, a GTI, a Golf R, a little bit larger, something like that.
I don't know what the budget is. Could he reach as high as a GLA?
Well, he's saying it's around the same as this used Abarth. $10,000 to $20,000?
A lot of them that are out there right now are 10 to 12. But if we can go as high as 20, a GLA AMG 45 is a nice place to just sit.
You know what I want for you is the 4C. The Alpha 4C,
sure,
they're not in your budget, unfortunately, at this point. But they are that small exotic. You won't see them coming and going. They do have good acceleration. It feels like you're driving a small Ferrari.
You're looking underneath the suspension of the truck in front of you, but hey.
Yeah. So for that, I mean, I don't love them on track at 10/10. You know this.
Yeah.
But backed off, doing the straight line thing, commuting, whatever, I think you'd have a riot in a 4C.
I can see it. I could see you sitting and commuting in a GLA and feeling like you're not buried under pickups and also
GLA
having some punch.
As a matter of fact, we do know somebody who is selling their very nice GLA. I've driven it. He's in California, up in Northern California. So if you're interested, you know, we do have one available.
You're still just working for pink slips is all you're doing.
That's really all you're doing. I am. Guys, thank you for all your questions. Really appreciate it. Send your debates, your ongoing debates, to everydaydrivertv@gmail.com or the top right corner of the website under the About tab is the contact button. It goes to the same place. So we aggregate those off of the website and they come to our email address as well. And for your Topic Tuesdays, your car conclusions. And then next podcast, we're continuing with the Best Of series.
Yep.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Probably be the last one. We'll see. We'll see if we can finally close it down. By the way, thank you guys for rating and reviewing this podcast and all of our other content, because all of that helps. We really appreciate it.
Here's to next time. Cheers, everyone.